Dr. William Luther Pierce, 1998, A Confluence of Crises.
Hello. We are living in interesting times, and they become more interesting almost by the day. I want to take a look today at a surprising confluence of developments around the world. The most interesting recent development here in the United States, of course, has been the bottom dropping out of the prestige and credibility of the U.S. government. People around the world understand that the United States is still dangerous, but they regard us about the way we would regard a drunken bully with a loaded shotgun. We want to stay out of his way, but we certainly don't respect him. And this development is due only in part to the disgrace of Bill Clinton. And the disgrace of Bill Clinton is not due primarily to the fact that he had a sexual relationship with Monica Lewinsky or even that he lied about it. We expect politicians in a democracy to be liars, and we certainly shouldn't be surprised when their sex lives become a bit more complicated than those of the rest of us. No, the disgrace of Bill Clinton is not that he shows himself to be a lecher and a liar, but that he shows himself to be a fool. Imagine the so-called leader of the free world explaining to a federal grand jury why he believes that Monica Lewinsky had a sexual relationship with him, but he didn't have a sexual relationship with her. Really. Not only does Bill Clinton lose every shred of credibility and dignity, but so does the government which he heads. And in the eyes of the world, so does America. And I should mention in this regard that we haven't even seen the worst of Clinton's disgrace yet. He is, in essence, a scumbag, a piece of white trash who has lied and cheated and stolen all his life. He got away with it until Monica Lewinsky and Ken Starr pulled him down because he is a talented and charming liar who was supported and protected by the media bosses. But now that he's down, now that he is no longer of any use to the powerful Jews who formerly supported and protected him, there will be revelation after disgusting revelation about him as the media hounds stumble over each other in their efforts to dig up and expose every bit of dirt in Clinton's life. And believe me, there's more dirt there than you ever thought possible. Just wait and you'll see. You'll see the sort of filth that our political system in America is filled with. The media commentators, with their overwhelmingly Democratic sympathies, have been contrasting Bill Clinton's disgrace with that of Richard Nixon nearly 25 years ago, and they all have concluded that Nixon's crimes were much worse, that the case for impeachment of Nixon was much stronger. Perhaps so. Nixon wasn't the personal scumbag that Clinton is. Nixon didn't push cigars into the bodily orifices of female employees in the White House. But he undoubtedly, like everyone else who has been president during the past 60 years or so, was a criminal. But these debates about whether Clinton or Nixon was the bigger criminal all miss the point. The crime for which Clinton should have his head impaled on a spike on the White House gate is not that he is a scumbag or a perjurer. It is that he is a traitor. Clinton has had two aims throughout his adult life. His first aim has been to please himself, to indulge himself. And his second aim has been to please the people who could advance his career. All too often, this latter aim has meant trying to please Jews. He has packed his administration with Jews from top to bottom. His two appointees to the Supreme Court are both Jews, except for the good old boys he brought to Washington from Arkansas. Most of the people around Clinton, Most of his former boosters and supporters have been Jews. And now that he has embarrassed them with a Jewish woman, isn't that a bit of irony? Now that he has embarrassed them, they are in the forefront of those pulling him down. But never in his lifelong quest to please himself and to satisfy his supporters has Clinton been concerned with the interests of America or of his race. During the Vietnam War, he was demonstrating for America's communist enemies, smoking dope, marching in the street, and chanting, "Ho, ho, Ho Chi Minh, the Viet Cong's gonna win." When his Jewish boosters sneaked him into the White House nearly 6 years ago, he immediately began pushing more anti-American programs. Homosexuals in the military, trying to globalize the American economy by pushing more American jobs overseas, opening America's borders to the third world, hanging on to all of the government's so-called affirmative action and diversity programs, despite the damage these minority coddling programs have done to our society. And finally, serving as the front man and spokesman for the Jewish program to have a majority non-white America before the middle of the next century. Those are the capital crimes for which Clinton should be punished, not his self-indulgent debauchery with a Jewess and his foolish attempts to cover it up. Regardless of all the ironies involved, the situation we have in America now is one of weakness exposed, not military or economic weakness, but moral weakness. And in the long run, that is the most dangerous sort of weakness. And as I said a moment ago, it's not just Bill Clinton. It's the system which put him in office. And it's the American electorate who voted for him, the American public, which still gives Clinton a high approval rating, the American public, which still thinks he ought to finish his term in the White House instead of in prison. The public cannot approve of a moral leper without exposing its own moral weakness. The whole world sees a weak and foolish American public led by foolish, weak, self-indulgent criminals who dance to whatever tune is played by the Jewish media bosses. And I mean the whole world, not just Osama bin Laden and others who have a personal score to settle with us. This loss of moral authority, this loss of national dignity and prestige, will not be easily restored, and it may cost us dearly. Americans may not understand this now because they are still comfortable, but we will see. At the same time that we are having a moral crisis in America, much of the rest of the world is poised on the brink of economic catastrophe. Let's start with Russia, which is in the middle of a full-fledged economic and political crisis. I've spoken with you before about the Russian situation. I told you in my program 2 weeks ago how Russia was, for all practical purposes, stolen by gangsters collaborating with the Soviet bureaucracy during the process of privatization. The Soviet government, instead of selling shares in government-run enterprises such as factories, mines, television networks, and so on to the Russian people, essentially gave these enterprises to Jewish gangsters. The result is that today half of the Russian economy is owned by 7 billionaires. And 6 of those 7 are Jews, and they all have ties to organized crime. Much of the remainder of the Russian economy is also in the hands of organized criminals. Russia's nominal president, Boris Yeltsin, a Slavic version of Bill Clinton, was essentially put into office by these Jewish gangsters who used their stolen wealth and their control of the Russian mass media to support him. In turn, Yeltsin takes orders from these Jews. He is as much under the control of the tiny Jewish minority in Russia as Clinton is under the control of the Jews in the United States. The economy in Russia has collapsed because the Jews who run the country have behaved like a gang of pirates dividing up stolen booty. They care about neither Russia nor the Russian people. Their one concern, other than getting their loot safely stashed in Swiss banks, is keeping the Russians from organizing against them. Russian nationalism, Russian patriotism is their nightmare. If the Jews in Russia were as smart as they think they are, they would keep a much lower profile. They would not flaunt their wealth in the face of the starving Russian people. They would not boast about their political power and their control of Yeltsin, as one of them in particular, Boris Abramovich Berezovsky, likes to do. But Jews seem to have a boom or bust mentality. They seem as unable to moderate their behavior as Bill Clinton is unable to keep his zipper up. Instead of backing off a bit during Russia's current crisis, they have moved to tighten their grip on the country by having one of their own installed as prime minister. The new prime minister of Russia, Yevgeny Primakov, chosen by Berezovsky and the other Jewish oligarchs, has been praised by the New York Times as a tough, experienced bureaucrat, just the sort to straighten out Russia's economic problems. What the New York Times has not said is that Primakov is not the name he was born with. His family name actually is Finkelstein, and his Jewish parents called him Pinkas. Pinkas Finkelstein, Prime Minister of Russia. Amazing, isn't it? It's almost like something right out of the protocols of the learned elders of Zion, this grasping, leering, insatiable greed of theirs. They believe that with their control of the mass media, their gangster tactics in their business operations, and former secret police boss Finkelstein Primakov heading the government, they can continue exploiting the Russian people just as they have done for the last 80 years since they overthrew the Russian government and murdered the Tsar. Plus, they're also counting on the fact that when they ruled as communists, they selectively murdered two generations of the best of the Russian people. The Bolshevik commissars and their red rabble murdered not only those Russians who resisted their rule, but also everyone who might resist it in the future. They slaughtered whole classes of the Russian people, not just the aristocrats, but also the small landowners, the Russian middle class, the Russian intellectuals, the officer class. 20 million bearers of the best genes altogether. They wanted to create a country of couch potatoes, a country of democrats, of lemmings, who would not resist them and who could not compete with them. And for 80 years it worked, more or less, although the evidence indicates that Stalin was ready to turn on them just before his sudden death in 1953. When communism collapsed at the beginning of this decade, many Jews in the Soviet Union decided that the game was pretty nearly up, and they got out while the getting was good, flooding primarily into Israel and the United States, bringing much of their stolen loot and their organized crime with them. The tiny minority of Jews who remained in Russia are almost unbelievably arrogant and greedy. Despite their present strength, despite the fact that they still have their hands on the levers of power in Russia, their position has not been so precarious in any country since Hitler broke their grip in Germany in the 1930s. If the Russian people become any hungrier, or if a Russian nationalist comes to the fore in Russia, the Jews are likely to be finished in Russia, utterly finished, in a single violent uprising of the people. In the past, the Jews have counted on being able to play off one white nation against another when any danger confronted them. When the Germans threw them out in the 1930s, they were able to use the United States as a weapon to destroy Germany. And I'm sure that if the Russians do turn on them and begin cleaning up Russia, they'll try to get the United States to start a war against Russia. Not in our own name, of course, but using NATO or the United Nations as our instrument, just as in the case of the war against Iraq a few years ago. At the moment, however, with Clinton in disgrace and America's prestige abroad lower than it has been at any other time since the Second World War, the Jews might have trouble getting a war against Russia started. And so we do have an interesting confluence of events in the United States and Russia. Two countries so far apart, both under tight Jewish control, and both currently involved in a crisis. As for the rest of the world, especially Asia, we also have a precarious situation which could become much worse in the near future. Asia's prosperity in recent decades has been the direct result of the export of American technology and American industry. American corporations, lured by the prospect of extremely low wages in Asia, began having their products manufactured in Indonesia, Malaysia, China, Taiwan, and so on. Eventually, many Asian countries developed their own manufacturing capabilities and went into competition with the American companies which had built factories in Asia. That really helped to bring the cost of computer chips down. But the economies in many Asian countries became very dependent on their export industries. A slight decrease in the export market could bring on an economic crisis. And because of the policy of economic globalization, which both Clinton and his predecessors have been pushing, crises tend to spread quickly from one country to another. The current Asian problems are nowhere worse than in Indonesia and Malaysia. Continued and widespread rioting in Indonesia brought down the government there a few weeks ago. In neighboring Malaysia, the economic crisis is also extremely severe following the collapse of that country's currency late last year. In this regard, it is interesting to note that the Prime Minister of Malaysia has accused Jewish billionaire currency speculator George Soros of deliberately wrecking his country's economy by manipulating the exchange rate of the Malaysian monetary unit, the ringgit, relative to the dollar. That's the way Soros has made his billions, speculating in currency. The media and his bought politicians refer to him with great respect, almost with reverence, as an investor. But in fact, he's the stereotypical Jewish money changer. And it is also interesting to note that as soon as Malaysian Prime Minister Mahathir made his accusation against Soros, the U.S. Congress sent a resolution to Malaysia complaining that Mahathir is being anti-Semitic and calling for his resignation. Isn't that something? Soros is an international currency speculator from Hungary who meddles in the economies and in the politics of countries all over the world and has done enormous damage to many of these countries while reaping enormous profits for himself. And as soon as anyone complains about the destructive effects of his currency speculation, the U.S. Congress leaps to his defense and accuses his critics of being anti-Semitic. Would the U.S. Congress have concerned itself if Soros weren't a Jew? Soros, needless to say, has been one of Clinton's backers, and he also has close ties to several of the gangster oligarchs in Russia. Now, I do not believe that the Jews have deliberately caused the political and moral crisis in America, or the political and economic crisis in Russia, or the economic crisis in Asia, even though they have their hands in everything that's happening. I don't believe that they deliberately cause these crises because the crises are not in their best interests. You know, when an infection sickens and kills a person, it's fair to say that the disease organism which caused the sickness and death didn't deliberately kill the person because the person's death is not in the interests of the bacteria or viruses or whatever. When the host dies, they die. I believe that the Jews in Russia would prefer to continue sucking the blood of the Russian people indefinitely without any crisis. I believe that the Jews who supported Clinton and used him as a cat's paw to implement their programs and policies would have preferred that he not disgrace himself. I believe that George Soros would have preferred to take his profits in currency speculation without causing the collapse of Malaysia's economy. Of course, if a country does collapse in chaos as a result of his destructive speculation, all he really cares about is that there's another country handy for him to sink his fangs into. But motivations, interesting though they may be, are not our primary concern. Our primary concern is to free ourselves of Jewish influence, regain control of our destiny, and try to restore our society to health. And that also, I think, is the primary concern of Russian patriots now. And it also should be the primary concern of the peoples of Asia. It is mere chance, a fluke, that we have such a confluence of crises in the world today. But the basic cause of all these crises is the same. In each case, we have failed to keep our own house secure and in order. We have permitted aliens to infiltrate and gain the upper hand over us. If early in this century, Russia's Tsar Nicholas had thoroughly cleansed Russia, instead of getting into a war with Germany, a completely senseless war against his own kinfolk, if he had just gotten rid of the Jews in Russia instead of simply keeping them cooped up in the Pale, there never would have been a Bolshevik revolution, and 20 million of the best of his people would not have been butchered. If we in America had controlled our borders, kept control of our own mass media, and paid a little more attention to keeping our government and our political system clean, we never would have people like Bill Clinton in public office. And if the Asians had not let themselves be seduced by the lure of quick riches through so-called free trade, they would not be facing their current economic catastrophe. All of us should have paid much more attention to our own traditions, our own values, our own ways of doing things, and the Jews never would have gained a foothold anywhere. George Soros would be sitting behind a table in a synagogue somewhere in the Middle East, changing money for his fellow Jews instead of wrecking nations in Asia. I know that much of what I have said today sounds a bit strange to many of my American listeners. They are shocked and fascinated by the Clinton situation at the moment, but they really believe that pretty soon everything will settle down and be the way it was before. And if Asia doesn't go over the brink toward which it is sliding now, things will seem to return almost to normal in America for a while. For a while, if Asia doesn't go over the brink and pull the West down with it. And so, not believing that they're in any real danger, most Americans don't like to hear about Jewish conspiracies. They want to believe that Jews are pretty much like everyone else, just a little richer and perhaps a little pushier. They want to believe that nothing really bad will happen. That's unfortunate. In Russia, I believe, the people will take a more realistic view of things. At least, I hope they will. Thanks for being with me again today.